Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Lords Podcast with Will Rowe.
Well, welcome along and thanks for tuning in. We hear from Mihaela Jayawardena, Ian Bell and Ravi Bapara, discuss Joss Butler being mankadded and get excited about Team Shane and Team Sachin ahead of the MCC Rest of the World clash. And there's also a word from Shane Warne on day-night tests. I'm joined by England cricketer Heather Knight and the editor of The Cricketer magazine, Mr. Andrew Miller. Welcome both. How are we?
Good afternoon. Very well, thanks.
I'm very well, thank you, Will.
Nice to be at Lords.
Always.
Always good to be at Lords.
Favourite ground?
Yeah, favourite ground in England, definitely, without a doubt. Lucky enough to play a few times, so yeah, looking forward to it.
Lovely. Well, first thing I'd like to do in the podcast is do hashtag Ask Heather. We'll have a few questions in on Twitter from various listeners to the podcast. So, Heather, yeah, first one, fire away. It's from Barath. Who's your favourite teammate?
Ooh, favourite teammate, that's a difficult one. We tend to have teammates for very different moods. We've got every teammate under the book. So favourite teammate will probably have to be Laura Marsh for a very good storytelling. We've haven't had Laura in the squad for a while. She's been injured, so looking forward to having her back hopefully this summer.
And the next one from Georgia, who I believe used to do a bit of work in the MCC library actually.
Lovely.
Do you think being a fully professional cricketer has changed your perspective on the sport as a career for you, coming off the recent news that the women are now fully professional?
I don't think it's sort of changed my perspective too much. I think now a professional, I guess we've sort of talked about it as a squad, how sort of maybe it brings sort of added pressure and greater sort of responsibility and sort of accountability if we don't sort of perform well. But I don't think that's sort of a negative thing. I think that's almost a good thing. It's a great opportunity for us sort of as a squad to push the game and the standard forward. And I think, no, I don't think it's changed my perspective too much. I still love playing cricket and it's still the same game and it's still a huge honour to play for England, but it's even more special now we get sort of paid to do it. And just sort of thankful to the people that have played before me that sort of played it through the love. And yeah, it's a pretty special time to be involved in women's cricket.
With that, a lot of the women players work for Chance to Shine and do the coaching, which used to supplement your income because you weren't fully professional. Is that going to continue or do you think that might take a little bit of a hit?
Yeah, so we're all the current ambassadors for Chance Shine are going to carry on their roles, and we've also a few of the younger girls, I think three, making eight ambassadors altogether, are going to work for Chance Shine. So we'll do slightly less hours for Chance Shine, but it was something we all sort of spoke about and we all really wanted to carry on, just because something we love doing, love going into schools and sort of get girls and boys playing cricket. And I think it was the right thing to do, that Chance Shine have kind of been really good to us while we were amateur. And yes, if we've got the time to do it, we love to do it, and we're all going to continue, which is great.
And just on that note, I mean, I was down here, very fortunate to be down here, to watch the women's game, the MCC Rest of the World women's game a few weeks back. And then the following morning, it was 9 o'clock start for you guys after a long night in the tavern, to come out back here for the Spirit of Cricket Open Day, 600 kids all running around. And it was very interesting, actually, to view the two things as a one entity, really. Just, is very much a part of being professional, was this ambassadorial role model role that you have. And, you know, that's as much a part of being professional cricketers, as far as I can tell, for the women, is inspiring the next generation. It's as important, in my opinion, as actually getting out there and playing.
And Heather, I know you've got a sort of a personal connection with Rwanda, which is also about sort of promoting cricket in a completely different environment to Lords. Can you just sort of expand a little bit on your work with the Rwanda Cricket Association?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to go on a trip out to Rwanda just for the World Cup, actually, for the Rwandan Cricket Stadium Foundation. So their aim, sort of with the MCC as well, is to build a cricket stadium out there. I actually went and played on the only cricket ground out there, and it was very different to our setting at Lords this evening. Sort of a concrete strip, sort of three patchwork quilts of Astro put together, and it was actually the site of a massacre in the genocide back in 1994. So yeah, to go out there was amazing, to meet some of the people involved in that and also see people that sort of haven't got a lot, and cricket is amazing for them to kind of get them meet new people, and obviously with the genocide in Rwanda, it's kind of quite important to sort of bring people together over there. And yeah, it was just a real eye-opening trip actually. And yeah, so along the same sort of lines of Chance to Shine, to sort of get people into cricket and see how it does change lives. A bit of a cliche, but yeah, it was a great trip over there, and looking forward to doing a bike ride for them in September. So that'll be good fun with a few of the girls.
Who's
and,
doing that then? Who's involved in the bike ride?
Well, it's myself, Charlotte, Lydia and Jenny. So we're going to do it for the Rwandan Cricket Stadium Foundation and also Chance to Shine. So... Really yeah, nice. We'll get lacquered up.
I have to read all about that in Lydia's column, The Cricketer.
Is there a place where people can sponsor you? Is it all up and running yet? Or is...
There will be a place, but it's, as of yet, not a firm place. So there will be in the coming months.
Okay, well, watch this space.
Watch this space.
And your final Twitter question comes from Mia. Who is your favourite England men's cricketer?
Oh, wow, favourite men's cricketer. That's a difficult one, really. There's quite a few new faces in the squad for Thursday, so I'd have to say probably Cookie, the way he kind of relentlessly scores runs, or has done in the past, and just kind of his approach to the game is something, as an opening batter as well, that I've really respected. And yeah, hopefully he'll be back in the runs again soon and doing well as captain. Don't know who your favourite cricketer is, Andrew? Not to put you on the spot.
Well, my favourite of all time, Angus Fraser, wrote about it piece many moons ago, along those lines. I first saw him in 1990, but probably my favourite of the current crop. I've always enjoyed working alongside Matt Prior in media capacity. He's always very open, very honest, very approachable, and just a nice bloke, I find.
Well, that helps segue into our next section. As discussed at the top of the programme, we're going to talk a little bit about Butler being man-cadded. I'll throw it straight open. I don't think I need to give this too much of an introduction. Was the right result reached?
I'll tee off on this one, shall I? I think it was, to be honest. I mean, you know, especially being at Lord's and all the talk of the spirit of cricket, etc. You certainly feel the spirit of cricket when you're sat up here in the media centre. But I don't believe that there was anything particularly untoward that day. He was warned twice for encroaching. And more to the point, we had Mihaela Jayawardene in the press conference afterwards making a very fair point that when Jos Buttler ran, and Ravi Papara literally ran... Sri Lanka so close in the ODI here a few days earlier, they ran 22 pairs of twos to come within 7 runs of winning the Test match. And to run twos when you should only be getting one means you're probably starting a little bit further down the pitch than maybe you would if you were back in your crease. So it was a strategic decision, possibly a little... They possibly pushed
this. It's always a controversial one, though, isn't
it?
It is. Being man-cadded. Because it happens... I mean, I've played in games in club cricket where it happens, and it does leave a... It's a bitter taste in the mouth, isn't it? I mean, Heather, are you allowed to comment on this one? Or?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a difficult one, isn't it? Was Butler trying to sort of steal a run? He was a couple of yards down the pitch, and I'm not too sure if it makes a huge amount of difference. But as a player and as a batter, I guess it's something you don't really want to see in the game. But coming down to the letter of law, Butler was in the wrong, and he was out. There was actually a time in New Zealand when we went out there 2 or 3 years ago now, there's a girl in the New Zealand team who was sort of renowned for doing it in state cricket, so which we were actually aware of, and we'd sort of made sure we were fully in the crease when she was bowling, and she did actually stop interaction a few times, and because we were fully in the crease, we would kind of say, sort of made her look a bit like an idiot, because we were in the crease, and she was obviously looking for it, and we obviously weren't trying to steal a run. So I think Butler will learn from it, and so will the England boys. But I guess it's something you don't really want to see in the game, and if you go into schools, you don't want to see sort of young kids copying it on the telly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's a fair point to make. But equally, I also feel that, you know, a little bit of needle is not necessarily a bad thing in a game of cricket. You know, you want to play hard, play fair, I think is the spirit of cricket motto, and that essentially is what happened. They played hard, a very close to the bone spiritual cricket thing, but it was fair. It was within the laws, and so, you know, and frankly, you saw the way that Alistair Cook wagged his finger at the end of the test, so I'll see you at Lord's, essentially. It set the test series up very nicely. I mean, you know, there's a lot to play for all of a sudden, where maybe, you know, people might have just started casting a glance ahead to India and 5 tests against India. Now we've got 2 very important tests coming up in the more immediate future.
So it's created a bit of needle in the game, and therefore we've got a more exciting test series ahead of us.
Damn right.
We do like a controversy in cricket, don't we? Keeps it interesting. That's exactly. Why we love it.
Lovely. Well, now let's turn our attentions to the MCC versus the rest of the world game. The full sides have been announced, and in the final instalment, as it were, it's been confirmed that Brian Lara and Aaron Finch will feature in the match here at Lords on Saturday, July the 5th. Sachin Tendulkar will captain MCC, while Shane Warne will captain the rest of the world side. Now, recently on the podcast, we've been picking people's England side, who they think will be in the first test, but I'd like the two of you to have a look at the teams in front of you and pick the Knight Miller MCC rest of the world Super 11, as it were.
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, if you would, you could almost pick two teams. The team that would do best on the day, given that half the guys are retirement age, and the team that is just the greatest team ever. So I suppose the greatest team ever is probably the more interesting one. But
yeah, definitely. There's a few stars in there, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Tendulkar and Warner are clearly shoo-ins, but openers-wise, I mean, who have we got?
Shall we start? Yeah, let's start. Who are you having opening the batting?
I'd go Finch, I think, definitely.
Yeah.
One day international, so.
Yeah, well, fair point.
Is it good nick as well?
Yeah, and guess on that note, you've got Gilchrist and Sehwag, so who would we have? I mean, Sehwag, I mean, he's. Although Gilchrist did get that monstrous 100 in the World Cup final, so that's a difficult one to balance out. But he's definitely in as a wicketkeeper, so let's go for Sehwag to open and have Gilchrist in as a wicketkeeper further down.
It's a shame. It's nice to have Devon Boy, Chris Reid in, but I think Gilchrist might just edge in there.
He might just. So, what's that? Then we need number three now. So, well, it's hard to look beyond Dravid in any format, is it? I mean, he's got to be in there.
Yeah, definitely.
So we're having Rahul Dravid at number three.
Rahul Dravid at three.
Anchor at three. And then it's got to be Sachin at four, surely.
Sachin at four and Lara at five. Well, he'll be a bit miffed about that, but, you know, needs must.
I'd quite like to see a rock at number six, maybe an Englishman, Paul Collingwood.
Yeah, let's get him in there. Damn right.
Got Collingwood.
Well, he's still England's leading. Well, you think he wasn't until Ian Bell, I was talking the other day, didn't he? But he's been England's leading run scorer in one day internationals for an awfully long time. So
yeah, before the flare of the top five doesn't quite pay off, and
exactly.
Then you've got a rock to steady the innings,
exactly.
And knock it around.
40 for five on a Lord's green top.
Exactly.
So,
a few seamers as well.
So that's our batsman. So we got number seven's Gilchrist. So who's our spin? Well, Warne at eight for a bit of spin, I guess, would be a good fit, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and then...
Oh, hello. We've overlooked someone rather massive.
Who's that?
KP. Yeah, I think I've got a berth for KP.
Well, you've omitted him.
We have. That's a tricky one, isn't
By
it?
By default.
By default. But Collingwood over KP. But, you know, you've got to have the balance, though.
You've got to have the balance. You've got to have that rocket.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Six.
Yeah, we got Rahul Dravid providing a bit of stability and Collingwood providing a bit of stability.
Who's our 9, 10 and 11 then?
I'd quite like to see Vittori in there. Best number 9 in the world.
It's a fair point.
And a little bit left armour, a little bit different.
Yeah, okay. So we've
Vittori
got two spinners. We need two seamers to finish it then. So Umar Gul's an awesome one day bowler.
Yeah, brilliant with a white ball.
Yeah, get him in there. And so who does that leave? Seema Wise, Brett Lee, I suppose.
Might have to be another Australian.
Yeah, I think so.
Sean Tate, Brett Lee and Peter Siddle. Those are your three that you've got left.
I think...
Tino as well, Tino Best.
Tino Best.
Watch the windows.
I think, you know, Brett Lee is, what, is he twice a World Cup winner? I think that's probably sufficient to get him
yeah,
a berth,
isn't it? Yeah, I think Brett Lee.
So the controversy there is KP. But then it wouldn't be KP if there wasn't controversy. So
the controversy is KP. Where have you heard that before? So you've left out in your 11. You don't have Mataima or Lithuan.
No.
No, he's not made it. Sean Tate, the Express.
Harsh, but fair.
Chandrapal, Syed Ajmal.
Chandrapal.
Yeah.
Peter Siddle.
Yeah.
Well, it just goes to show, just basically, the two teams on offer. So we'll just go through that.
For money.
You've got Aaron Finch and Virinder Sehwag opening. Rahul Dravid at 3. Sachin Tendulkar at 4. Brian Lara at 5. Paul Collingwood 6. Gilchrist keeping wicket at 7. Shane Warne at 8. Daniel Vittori at 9. Umar Gul and Brett Lee to finish off.
And KP is 12th man. That'll please him.
The two of you looking forward to this match?
Yeah.
Yes, yep. I'm definitely coming along. So really can't wait, actually.
It was one of my... Genuinely, my earliest cricket memory was the 1987 Rest of the World game. The one thing I do remember, above all else, I would have been 9, I suppose. So old enough to sort of start getting it, but not old enough to get the nuances. And I remember Mike Gatting getting out and walking straight off the pitch, saying, right, that's it, I'm done, I'm out, so I'm going to walk off. He was declaring, but it just looked like he was stropping to me. It was like he's taking his bat and going home and taking his team with him. I thought, it's a bit odd. But that's the thing that stuck in my mind above all else. Above all those hundreds and the glorious run out of Graham Gooch and all the other things that happened.
The Roger Harper run out.
Roger Harper run out.
When he just turned and threw it down in one motion.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, Lords is famous for having these MCCV Rest of the World matches. Of course, there was a very special one this year as well. It was the first women's one, which, Heather, you played in and, well, you scored a lovely 50. So tell us a little bit about that day.
Yeah, what a great day it was. First time the MCC have done a women's game, so... Great to have a team from the rest of the world. Some of the sort of names in that team was amazing, and to kind of play against them. I think we did quite well to get within 40 of them with the England team in the end. Brilliant day. Really enjoyed by everyone involved, I think. And it's always special to play at Lords and quite nice to be involved in that kind of game as well, without the added pressures of playing for England. But still haven't won at Lords. In 4 goes, I still haven't won. We've got a one-day international here later in the year against India, so we'll be hoping to break that trend, hopefully. It's not a very nice statistic.
Break the duck.
It was an amazing day. It was really, really enjoyable, I mean, particularly as I was up in the President's Box, which is always a bonus. But it was particularly special because, as you say, the quality of the teams was incredible. And again, that sort of rang true back in 1987. The reason that I really pricked my ears up was that anyone who was anyone was playing. I mean, whether it was Gavaskar or Imran or Gooch or Marshall, they were all there. And likewise, the rest of the world team was a who's who of all the best women's cricketers from around the world. And you know, that's the sort of thing you know, with respect to the team that's been put out for the men's game, it's a very good team, but it's not the absolute cream of the international crop in the way that the women's game was. So it was a special occasion. It's nice to believe that you can actually just flip into your phone book, ring up the best players in the world and say, come and play this game, and they turn up. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a really good showcase for women's cricket as well. So sort of how far the games come, and sort of just the players on show for the rest of the world and for the England team as well was just made for a great game, and hopefully everyone that came to watch was entertained.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the women's match in particular, did you think that you'd get to a stage in women's cricket where you'd have a game with that rest of the world side? I mean, a couple of years ago, sitting here, you probably wouldn't have imagined Elise Perry, Mitali Raj, you know, playing on the same side at Lords against the MCC, or you guys, who were made up basically of the England women and a couple of others. Claire Taylor, who's just retired, but came back for the game, which was lovely.
Yeah, it was a bit surreal, really. I remember sitting on the balcony and kind of looking down and seeing Deandra Dottin at long on and then Meg Lanning at long off. So, yeah, it was quite strange. It was really nice, though. I think sort of the girls from the rest of the world sort of obviously sharing the same dressing room all gone really well, which is strange considering sort of they're still playing against each other and still obviously very competitive. But it was a brilliant day, and yeah, I never really imagined that it would take place, but great that sort of the MCC hosted it and got all the best players in the world involved. And yeah, hopefully it'll come back next year, maybe.
Well, lovely. Now, it's long been an aim of MCC to bring in day-night test cricket as a way of reinvigorating spectator numbers in certain parts of the cricketing world. I recently spoke to Australian legend Shane Warne and asked him if he'd welcome day-night test cricket.
I'm a traditionalist, I suppose. I like to see white clothes and a red ball, but I'm all for innovation if it's improving the game. I don't like change for the sake of it. I think if it's a change to improve the game, then that's okay. So let's try it. But what we don't want to see is the bowlers all over the bats and the batsmen can't pick it up because, as I said, we want to see a contest. So if the batsman can pick it up, okay. It doesn't do anything silly under lights and it works and the public like it, then that's great. Let's give it a go. But as I said, I'm not for change unless it's for the better.
Shane Warne on the prospect of day-night test matches there. His final line is not for change unless it's for the better. Andrew, where do you stand on the idea of day-night test cricket?
Well, I thought he summed up very nicely there. I think it is important, and I think test cricket has shown in the fact that it's still going strong after, 135 years or whatever, that it has this odd ability to adapt to the environment in which it is played. And, you know, you've seen that from Bodyline through the four quicks of the West Indies through Shane Warne's own ability to change the game by reintroducing leg spin. There has been this ability of Test cricket to evolve and adapt to its environment, and the environment we're in at the moment is one whereby people are losing the ability to put aside 5 days to just sit and watch a cricket match. But, you know, if it does shift its time zone and, you know, starts at tea time and finishes at midnight, by definition, people will not be working. They might be able to go and watch, just as we've seen in 2020 cricket. People turn up after work and stadiums are packed because they can get there. They can actually be present at an event. And so, you know, if it does adapt to new realities, I'm all for it. I think it's important that Test cricket does innovate. And we've seen, you know, again, with the way Steve Waugh's Australians managed to sort of take the tempo of one-day cricket and suddenly start scoring 300 runs in a day as standard, and now we've got 2020 players like David Warner coming through and making their mark in Test cricket. There's absolutely no reason why Test cricket can't adapt to what is frankly a good idea and one that will actually help the game in the future.
Can you see why some people would object to something which is, you could say, it's almost fundamentally changing the game in the time at which it's played? I mean, that is a potentially a huge change for some of the test matches.
Potentially a huge change, but then changes have happened in other ways that are possibly less obvious. I mean, think of the size of bats, for instance. That has changed. The bat that you use in a test match today is not the same bat that Bradman used, but yet you still try and compare like for like when it comes to averages. And so, you know, I think I would love, to be honest, I would love to watch a session of cricket when, you know, the sun is just starting to set and you've got Mitchell Johnson warming up to take the new ball and you've got a guy who's well set and you think, right, okay, this next period of cricket is going to be immense because, you know, if he can get through this changing period, just as, you know, you have to get through deterioration of pitches as the fifth
Heather's
day.
Heather's face when you said the sun is about to set, Mitchell Johnson has got the ball, was not one of a batsman relishing that opportunity.
No, I think I'd be back enough to square leg if that's happening. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because obviously the conditions, having played in sort of day-night matches, are extremely different during the day and during the night. It skids on a bit more, dew comes into play. And I probably have to agree with Shane there. I think for me, there's nothing better to going along to a test match, a whole day at the test match, sort of in the English summertime with a Red Bull, sort of spending all day there in the sun, hopefully. Probably not in England, though. And watching the game, but I don't know what I'm all for innovation. Why don't we try it? But like Shane says, I think we have to find something that works. And I think as a batter, it's probably hard for me to say this, but I think a lot of the changes sort of have been in batsmen's favour in the recent years, and maybe sort of this one might be sort of in the bowler's favour. Might nip around and do a little bit more under lights.
Yeah. The other key thing he said was as long as the batsman can see it, and that's absolutely fundamental. You know, if the pink ball and, you know, the trials are ongoing, and, you know, there'd be mixed reviews in some places they have been less mixed, but as long as that pink ball or whatever it turns out to be is a ball that can be seen in daylight and nighttime and twilight, then bring it on, frankly. I think it's good for the game.
History and Cricket with the Lords Podcast.
Now, it's the most famous walk in cricket, coming out of the players' dressing room, down past the portraits of cricketing greats, through the long room, and finally out onto the concourse, and then onto the hallowed turf at Lord's. Here, Sri Lanka's Mahela Jayawardena, England's Ian Bell and Ravi Bapara describe just how it feels to make that walk.
You've always known about walking through the long room. That's a tradition that only at Lord's that happens, and it's been the same way all the times I've walked through that. So the first time I was a bit nervous, but after that, gotten used to it, and it's a very special moment.
Still have that same feeling as if it's your first time. It's the reason why you play cricket. You have those sort of nerves and those butterflies come back.
It is one of the best walks, you know, at Lord's. Walking in through the long room, there's a lot of noise in the long room. Walking when you're walking out to bat, when you're walking back in as well. So it's a brilliant place to play cricket.
Ravi Bapara there summing it up quite nicely. Then it's a brilliant place to play cricket. I think that's a fair assumption.
Yeah, it is indeed. I remember the first time I played here, actually, probably about 4 years ago. I'm glad I was opening the batting. I was a bit worried about getting lost, so luckily I was opening and wasn't in too much trouble. But no, it was great. I remember walking through the long room the first time and sort of hearing the members sort of clap and sort of make a lot of noise for the England team and a few comments here and there. And yeah, I got goosebumps the first time I did it, and yeah, it's still special every time we play here, and yeah, definitely the best walk in cricket. Some interesting portraits as well.
Yeah, well, talking of portraits, this leads nicely into...
Good segue there.
Yeah, good segue.
Brilliant.
Well, there's recently been a rehang in the pavilion, and they've moved some of the portraits about, and Andrew, you've done some research and put together a very nice article.
Well, indeed. It all came off the back of a drunken conversation with Adam Chadwick, the curator, after the Wisden dinner. It's like when someone notices, you know, a new haircut or whatever. I made the point to him, you've got new pictures on the walls. He said, yes, someone's noticed. And immediately took me off on a whistle-stop tour around all the staircases to talk me through some of the stories behind the pictures, because that's the most interesting thing. And immediately it was obvious that it's not just that there are great pictures, there are great stories behind the pictures, and particularly I found on the away staircase, the home staircase has got all these great former England captains from Jardine to Gooch, etc. But they're slightly more staid, with honourable exception of Michael Vaughan. They're slightly more sort of stiff and blazered and not very relaxed. Whereas on the away dressing room, they've got, you know, some of the most awesome paintings I've ever seen. I mean, there's this one of Viv Richards that is just immense. It was actually painted using a hand drill. This is the most fascinating thing that I was told.
It was painted using a hand drill.
Yeah, the painter knew nothing about Viv Richards. Brendan Kelly, the painter, was commissioned to paint Viv Richards, but knew nothing about cricket, knew nothing about Viv Richards, except he was called the Master Blaster. And so I thought, that's cool. I wonder how I can convey the notion of master blasting onto a picture. So he got a hand drill and whizzed every single one of his brush strokes onto the canvas instead of just using conventional strokes. So there you go. That's one such story.
Well, I'd struggle to use a paintbrush, I think.
Yeah, well, apparently he put cling film down to make sure that all the paint splattered in the right place. So he'd try it out, and if it looked right, he'd take the cling film away and do it again. It was a laborious process. But my favourite story concerns one of the most objectionable men I've ever met, Dilip Vensarkar. I can say this. I bumped into him in Mumbai just randomly. You know, you bump into, my God, it's Dilip Vensarkar.
Were you there on work?
I was there.
So it wasn't that random. Well, the way you said that was like you walked into Mumbai and he was just there.
It was the middle of Mumbai Maidan. It was the middle of Mumbai Maidan. So, you know, lots of games of street cricket taking place. And then Dilip Vensarkar's in the middle of it. And I thought, it's Dilip Vensarkar. So I went up to shake his hand. Hello, Dilip Vensarkar. I'm a great fan of yours. I watched your century here at Lord's and blah, blah, blah. And he just looked down his nose at me and walked away. It was charming. And it turns out I'm not the only one. Apparently, his painting was commissioned, he was so objectionable to the painter. He didn't turn up in his whites and just generally treated the whole process as a chore. And so if you look closely at the painting, the bail is missing from his off stump. He's been bowled in his own picture. So that was the artist's revenge.
So he's got back at him.
Yeah, got back at him. So he put dark clouds, dark stormy clouds in the background, and painted him in his black shoes instead of cricket boots, just to make the point that you really weren't buying into this process. And then next to him, we've got Bishan Bedi, who's all joy and happiness and delighted to be asked to be painted. So a nice bright sunny background, and he's got perfect whites and nice smile, etc. Artists can have you when your portrait's commissioned, Heather, just bear that in mind. Be nice to the artist.
Yeah, make sure you turn up in your whites or whatever they ask you to do. Or they'll have you clean bold in the background. clearly, if you're listening to this, you can't see the paintings you're describing, but we do have the online collection at Lords, which is on our website, lords.org. Just go onto that and follow the relevant links and you can see all the paintings. They're all online. Or you can purchase the current edition of the Cricketer magazine, and they're all in there as well.
Indeed.
So there you go. To finish off the podcast, I'd like to do the Bicentenary podcast quiz.
Ooh.
Which I must admit, I think I forgot.
Dreadful at quizzes.
Well, this one's a bit of potluck. Basically, all you have to do is pick between, well, I'll give you a cricketer and a non-cricketer, famous people, and you just have to tell me who is older. So... That's it, really. It's the best of five. It's like a penalty shootout.
Okay.
You're going up against each other.
It's none of my teammates in this, are they?
No, I don't think there are. Although your teammate, Sarah Taylor, I believe, she won her attempt at it. She beat Lizzie Ammon, Legside Lizzie. So you've got a lot to live up to. Lots of pressure. So, Heather, we can have you going first. And Andrew, you can go second to start off with. Right. So the first one, quite simply... Who is older between Ian Botham, who is a cricketing legend, and a musical legend, Prince?
Oh, God. I'm going to have to go with Prince.
Interesting. Well, Botham turned 50 in November 2005, because I was in the Faisalabad test, so what does that make him? That makes him 59. God, how's that happen? I think you're probably right.
Mum's a guess. You've gone on lots of logic. So.
Well, I'm trying to work out the logic there, but Prince has been around for donkeys, hasn't he?
He looks good for 59.
Yeah, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So you're both going for Botham?
No, I'm saying Prince is older.
Prince is older and Botham's older.
I actually think Prince is older. I agree.
So you both think Prince is older?
Yeah.
Well, you're both wrong.
Oh.
Ian Botham is in fact older.
Was he 59?
58 probably, but...
He was born in November 1955, and Prince was born in June 1958.
Okay.
So there's, 3 years in it. Well, 0-0 after the first one.
So no point in extra knowledge when you get it wrong.
next one, Andrew, you can go first on this one. Alan Knott, forming the wicketkeeper, or the current England football manager, Roy Hodgson?
Right, so Notty would have been... There's no point doing any maths here. I'm going to go for Notty.
Oh, God. Right, another guess from me, and I'm going to go against Andrew. I'm going to go with Hodgson.
Oh, well, we have our first score, of course, and Alan Notty is indeed older. So
get in.
Andrew goes... So gracious. 1-0 up with 3 to play.
Oof.
Heather, you go first on this one. Former international umpire Simon Talfall or Christian Bale, the actor?
Okay,
I was referring to the other one.
I think Bale might be older. No logic again, just pure guesswork.
Well, Talfall was absurdly young when he started being an international umpire, that's all I know. So he's... By definition, he must still be absolutely. But hang on, Christian Bale was the kid in Empire of the Sun, wasn't he? So how? When was that? That was 1989. He must have been about 11. So that would make. That would make him the same age as me. So surely Toffel's older than me. So I'm going to go Toffel.
So you're saying Toffel and you're saying Bale, Heather.
Yep.
Okay. Well, Andrew takes a 2-0 lead.
It's an unassailable lead.
Well, now you can pull it back. We've still got 2 to go.
2 to go.
2 to go. Here we go. Andrew, you go first on this one. I don't really need to introduce these two. Richie Beno or the Queen?
Oh, God.
Are they one and the same? right. So, Richie Ben, a queen would... Queen would... Is it my turn to go first?
Yes,
it is. So the queen was 19 in 1952.
You've got a better memory than I have.
And Richie Beno would have been... Well, hang on, he would have been... 1956 he definitely played, so he would have been a young man in 1956. Would he have been 23? I think he would have been older than that. I think Richie Beno's older.
Heather?
I think the Queen... Is the Queen still in her 80s? So I'm going to go... Beno is older as well.
Oh, well, you both got it wrong.
God.
Which, the Queen is indeed older, but I won't give her age away, as I'm a gentleman.
Never tell a lady's age.
Finally, it's still 2-0 to Andrew, one to go, but why not just finish off? Aussie wicketkeeper Adam Gilchrist or current Labour leader Ed Miliband? Heather, you go first.
Oh, God. But Ed Miliband always reminds me of Wallace and Gromit. who's older? I think Adam Gilchrist. Gilly might just be slightly older.
Okay.
One for 1 point.
So Gilchrist was absurdly old when he made his debut in 98. So take it back to born in 1970. So roughly. I think Gilchrist just...
So you've gone for both, gone for Gilchrist. Miliband is older by 2 years.
Well, there we go.
So well, there you go.
Donuts for me, no score.
No score, yeah. So it finishes 2-0 to Andrew. So well played.
Well done, Andrew. Well played.
Well, thank you very much for doing the Bicentenary Quiz. Just to finish off, what have you got in the next sort of month coming up then, Heather?
We've got lots of training, to be honest. Now we're professionals, so we're up at Loughborough as a squad every week, training together. And we've also got county and club games. We haven't got any England stuff until August. We kick off our series against India at Wormsley again, so great news that we're playing there again. And then we've got 3 ODIs against India, one of which is at the home of cricket, pleased to say. And then South Africa coming over in September, so a little bit later on this summer, so a bit of a gap before the internationals kick off, but yeah, still really excited to get going.
Very busy. Well, best of luck with that all, and thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Cheers, Will.
And Andrew, what's next on your agenda?
Well, the next issue of the Mag comes out shortly, or will probably be out by the time it's come out. And we've got Alex Hales among our interviewees this month, so talking to him about why he keeps getting overlooked for all sorts of jobs that seem to be tailor-made for him. We've also got Chiteshwar Pujara previewing the India series, which should be fun. And Lalit Modi teeing off. So he's been lively lately. So
quite literally teeing off.
We got him watching the semi-final of the IPL and getting overexcited about it. So yeah, it's quite a fun piece. Ed Hawkins, who's been writing all sorts of books about nefarious deeds, is all over that one. So that'll be in the shops imminently.
Great. Well, look forward to it. And again, many thank you for coming on the podcast.
Always a pleasure.
Great. Well, many thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next month with more cricketing stories from Lords. So remember to follow us on Twitter. Our handle's @HomerCricket. Be our friend on Facebook. And for all the latest news from Lords, just go to lords.org. See you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.